Hello, this is a Creative Disturbance podcast, and this is the Indie Game Nation channel. I'm your host, Kyle Condis. I'm here with Neil Carr. How's it going, Neil?
How's it going, Kyle? I'm happy to be back in Dallas.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I came back last year.
It was almost a year ago, I think.
That's right. It's good to be back again, because now I get to see some of the students again and get familiarized with the program.
I think last time you just kind of talked in the class, and this time you actually got to see student work.
Yeah, last time was completely impromptu. I just had some free time. I came to Dallas, and I pinged Greg, and then Greg pinged you.
Yep. Ding, ding, ding. And now we actually had a bigger event where you actually got to talk to a whole bunch of students and actual faculty showed up too. So
yeah, I had an actual PowerPoint. So now I've got a little bit of a system now that I've actually given this talk at UCSB.
When I think you said my class is like your guinea pig stage, you kind of figure out what you were going
to
say.
That was the first time I had actually given a talk to any place in a college. So that was the first time I got really try it out, and then I made a PowerPoint and I went to UCSB and did CMU, my old master's program. So this is the third time I've officially given the talk.
Wow. I think you're about to become an old pro at it pretty soon.
Yeah, I would love to give talks more because it really connects me back to kind of students, and I love seeing students come up the ranks and become industry professional.
You had a lot of them asking you questions, which was really nice to see.
No, and I love answering questions because I think the kids that ask questions, they really want to make an impact on their own future, and I would love to kind of guide them one way or another, even if it's in a very brief way. And I think that makes a big difference in their lives.
So let me get started off just real quickly. For the past 8.5 years, you were the lead technical artist at Infinity Ward, which put out the Call of Duty games. Call of Duty Modern Warfare, I think, were some of the ones you worked on, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you please, let's just let people know what a lead technical artist is. I mean, some probably know, but other people might not.
Yeah. So I started off as a technical artist, technical animator. Actually was an intern first, a technical art intern. And about 4.5 months in, I got hired full-time. So after that, I was tech animator for the next 4 years, and then I got promoted to a lead technical artist. So the interesting thing about technical art is it was never really defined, especially 10 years ago. And it's still sort of a special
iffy kind of title, or
it's not so much iffy, but it's like it's a
ever-changing, maybe? Or
it changes from studio to studio.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sometimes the way a studio defines technical art is different from the other places. Sometimes, you know, it's very much rigging-centric. Sometimes it's very shader-centric. Sometimes they just really want a guy who can figure things out and be in the middle and be the conversation point between the tech guys, the code guys, and the art guys. And make the lives easier on both sides. Mm-hmm. So that's the broad description, is you're the bridge between tech and art.
Gotcha.
You know, and in other places, you know, you even have the opportunity to be creative with the tech art, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You can actually invent systems that can, you know, go into the game. And this is in smaller places. Like,
were you ever able to do this, or?
In rudimentary ways, I think less so, because I think Call of Duty has its parameters and, like, the ways I could contribute. But Infinity Ward was cool because they let me do things more than just tech art, and I think I got to pitch ideas and show them things. Like, I was always into rendering, and you know, with a game you don't do a lot of rendering, so I would do some mental ray renders and then show it to the company, and they were like, oh, okay, this is cool, we could use this for a publicity shot. And then I think I pitched them a menu concept where I rendered the guns out. They really liked that, so they got back to me like, okay, listen, you can render out the guns. So in some ways, I use my tech chops to kind of pitch ideas to
That's
them,
cool.
too. So
okay.
in this case, rendering, which wasn't really in line with what a game is, but still got to.
It sounds like, I'm not going to say this for every studio, but it sounds like you had a little more freedom than some maybe lead technical artists might have. Would you say that? Or
yeah, I definitely agree. I think even when before I was a lead, I think the place was organic enough. It wasn't as, like, rigidly structured where you have to fall in line and do these things, which I did. I mean, I had a certain set of responsibilities that, you know, I had to work on deformation for characters, or, you know, work on destructible vehicles. Mm-hmm. And those were my core tasks.
Okay.
But when I go past my core tasks, you know, I was trying to bring in ideas, because I think the great thing about IW, especially back in the day, 2006 to 2010, you know, the crew was so enthusiastic about the product that you really want to contribute. And whenever I got a chance, I would try and do that. So there was a lull between MW1 and 2 where, you know, tech art isn't as important in the conceptual stage, but maybe you're working on tools and whatnot. But I really wanted to contribute on the concept end, and ended up doing some concept pieces for MW2. And it was great. I actually got credited as a concept artist on MW2 as well as being a technical animator, which is kind of a weird combo of credits. But, you know, that was the fun part of it, that I actually wanted, I had ideas, you know, like, you know, let's hang a Humvee from a what was it, a helicopter.
Oh, geez.
And it was a cool concept, and they actually liked it, so they put it on some set pieces. So that was great to just kind of bring your own ideas and things that you want to really show to people. And then people accept it and then, you know, run with it.
Well, I mean, it had to be kind of exciting, even if you maybe weren't on the major, like, I don't want to say the major creative team, you were really technical artists, but just seeing something that maybe you pitched inside of a game, it had to be kind of exciting just to kind of see your idea come to fruition.
Yeah, especially because we had a smaller crew, and I think people, the ideas got to them faster. You know, so someone can look at it and be like, oh, cool. And then they just come straight to me and be like, oh, we would like to see a variation on this or that. And the same way with the tech artwork that I was doing. Like, if I was working on a destructible vehicle of some sort, then, you know, they would come back to me and say, oh, this is broken. And there was no production pipeline we had to go through. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the advantages of being in a smaller, like, skeleton type of crew. You know, it's like, okay, it's trim and fast.
Okay, so I know you also worked on Ghost, which was the most recent game, but let me come back to that in a second. What was your experience working for, like, the kind of, like, AAA kind of company? I mean, like, you know, you said the first 4 years was really kind of exciting. Did it change over? Or what was your experience, I guess, compared to, like, smaller companies that are out now, especially the indie game scene?
Yeah, that's, I mean, my whole career lifespan has been in IW, so I think the changes that I've seen at IW was it going from a much smaller crew of 60, let's say, to now, you know, actually latest count, I think it's around 240 or so.
Oh, wow.
So the company's grown a lot.
Like over three times the size.
Yeah. Over the years, it's definitely grown tremendously. So I think, again, the first game that I worked on was MW1, mm-hmm. and that was such a special time in my life that, you know, I can't discount that moment, that project. And it's going to be my favorite moment or project that I've had in my gaming career. But I do think that smaller team is more productive. Although I think with bigger companies, they want to output more games with more things in it, more content in it. And I think that's not conducive with a smaller team.
Well, I mean, do you, like, would you agree this maybe, I guess, coming from an, like, I mean, I know you have an art back, like, minor background.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the way I've always seen it is, like, you know, when you look at some of the AAA titles, and this is not a knock on them, because, I mean, I play them too.
Yeah.
But, like, when you work for the larger title, sometimes it's kind of harder to see what you might have done in that game, whereas a smaller game, with whether or not you're actually backed by a bigger company, but sometimes it's easier to kind of see what your work is done in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're a much larger stakeholder when you're working on a smaller team.
Yeah.
You know, you can do more things because they need you to do more things because they come to you like, well, we need you to figure it out, you know, or you figure it out and you go to the people and tell them how you figured it out. And it'll be welcomed because you're not going to be stepping on anyone's toes. You're going to be like, oh, well, great. Okay. Well, that way you're doing multiple tasks without having to, you know, go out and hire someone. But, you know, that changes with how you scope the project. The project gets bigger, then, you know, you have to hire
more people,
a set amount of producers, mm-hmm. a set amount of, you know, environment artists, or you can start outsourcing art, you know. So I think there's an interesting balance there that's skewed upwards, like, tremendously over the last few years. Even with other studios, it's not just Call of Duty. It's, you know, Assassin's Creed has just become such a big venture.
Well, I think a lot of those games, mm-hmm. I mean, Assassin's Creed, let's take that for a second. I mean, I guess it was built as a AAA title, but I think even if you compare Assassin's Creed 1 to the current one, it's definitely grown larger in size and scope.
I mean, they're trying to build, like, really fleshed out environments, and you just need more people. You know, there's no other way. And I think I think the soul is still there, but it's like, it's kind of like pasted on content on top of that soul, you know. So I think that's one of the issues I have with, and that's one of the issues I had to bring myself out of IW because I had worked on 4 Call of Duties, and I think I wanted to get a little fresh start on maybe something smaller or something that I can work on a 10-person team or a 20-person team or a 30-person team.
Gotcha. Now you said, like you said, like we already mentioned, four Call of Duties, the last one being Ghost. You kind of had, you kind of had an interesting experience on the fourth one because you weren't just a technical artist, you were also director for the cinematics.
Yeah.
How did that come about? I mean, what kind of drew you to want to kind of do the cinematics and direct that kind of part of the game?
Yeah, I was lead tech artist on Ghost, where I was rebuilding a tech art team, tech animation team. But about halfway through the project, we realized that there was a void in the major stakeholder in the cinematics. So we had a group of people who would meet and talk about what it wanted to be, but it never ended up having a person that was the flag bearer.
Gotcha.
So my coworker Jake Rowell and I, we kind of picked up the flag on that, and we're like, listen, we're gonna start doing storyboards and trying to come up with the key art, find the references that are going to map to the time we have to execute this, find the right partner in the studio that's going to work on the production of these movies. So that was a kind of a passion project that was added on top of my responsibilities as a lead technical artist. So it was interesting to be part of the tech aspect, which is a lot of problem solving and fixing and bugs, and then you add the creative bend on that, where I was doing the storyboards and the key art and the direction with Jake. And I think it was an intense amount of work for about 7 months.
Imagine.
Yeah, but I'm so happy that I actually took that plunge. And
I've seen the cinematics; they're gorgeous, you know. And you were, and like your talk today, you were kind of like showing some. I think some of the back like influences have been like the opening to Lady with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah,
you're kind of showing that, and just the way the I guess the liquid kind of flowed, and the way you. I remember, I think my favorite one was the one where you're. Who's the main guy that they turned in your cinematics? What's his name?
Rourke. Yeah.
You know, there's that scene where he's in the ditch and they poison him, and you said like he starts breaking out, almost turning like the thing from the Fantastic Four, like just this rock kind of solid kind of character.
Yeah,
it was just the way that kind of flows and tells a story.
Yeah.
Which how was the storytelling? This, I mean, you had to tell a story. You made what, 18 cinematics? You said.
Yeah, we had to make eight, every level needed a small cinematic.
So there were 18 levels in that game
at the front. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we had to make a cinematic for each of them. And that's kind of been the Call of Duty model for the games that have come out since Modern Warfare 1. Gotcha. So that's like the format we had to stick to. So you get like about 45 seconds to do some sort of exposition before a level.
Geez. And it really showed how much there's almost like a cross-boundary of film and games in today's media.
Yeah.
But how was the storytelling process? I mean, was it something you came up with yourself, or did they give you scripts? What was the, like, how was it making 18 different cinematics and telling that story?
Yeah, so we would get a script, which would just be, you know, this person talks, and this person talks, and this person talks, and there's some sort of description between. It might be visual, but usually wasn't. So I would get this script, and I think trying to figure out the visual metaphor for it was the key to putting it all together, because we broke the style of where we were going to go. Modern Warfare intros had a very specific style to them.
Okay.
You know, it was supposed to be very infographic, you know, very much militarized, kind of CNN type of broadcast.
And that wasn't what these were. I mean, these were very film-based kind of scenes.
Yeah, and I think that we drew a lot of inspiration from music videos. We drew a lot of inspiration from film intros. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to bring that look over to games because I think that was going to be fresh. I think that was going to be ideal for the new IP that was going to be Ghosts. And I think we wanted to separate ourselves from Modern Warfare because Modern Warfare was Modern Warfare and had a certain feel and militarized feel about it. And Ghosts was supposed to be more story-centric from the design end. And our designers would say that, you know, we want this to be more personal, more about the characters. Mm-hmm. And so with the 45-second bit we had, we knew we couldn't do a whole lot more than just make it a cool kind of abstract. In some ways, branding of the name Ghosts, we had to kind of figure out in that time space. We were like, okay, it needs to be cool, dark, kind of mysterious, and effects-driven, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the wispiness, the liquid nature, the organics, the shards. So we kind of played with a lot of shape language there.
Gotcha. Well, I guess that also kind of goes into now is that after 8.5 years, right? I guess you keep saying 8.5, 8.5 years. You know, you decided to kind of leave Infinity Ward. Now you're kind of freelancing. Where are you now, kind of after being able to direct and kind of get a little more creative? And then where are you kind of now in the artistic kind of atmosphere?
Well, those cinematics kind of changed my brain in terms of what I wanted to pursue in the future. I really fell in love with this GPU-based renderer called Octane, and the kind of images you can come up with on a very small cycle. Like, I've been using Mental Ray for years before that, but there's a tech hurdle of getting through setting things up for the scene, mm-hmm. and then the actual render time is a lot longer. You know, if you start putting a subsurface shader on something, it's just going to take you minutes. Mm-hmm. In this case, with Octane, you know, I get results in seconds. So about 5 to 10 seconds, you know, I get visuals that are very rich.
Has Octane been around for a while, or is this totally brand new?
It's newer. I actually haven't checked how long it's been around, but I discovered it in 2013,
okay.
and I actually used it for a couple images I sent over to the mill when I was working on the cinematics. It was just to kind of explain certain things. I was like, okay, I need a quick render. I don't want to set up a mental ray scene. Mm-hmm. It's going to take me too long, and I have to worry about how to set up the shader and whatnot. In Octane, it's kind of like drag and drop.
Gotcha.
Spin the light around and get to the effect. And they have a sun system, so if I want something outside,
oh wow,
I can move the sun around the globe map, and it'll give me different, you know, time of day type of looks.
That's cool.
So it's like a power tool for me now. And since I've left, I've done some freelancing, and I've been using Octane very religiously just to get like tons of different looks in a very short amount of time. I've got this little rig at home. It's got two Titan Black cards, and just, you know, it heats up a lot after 5 hours of work. But it's been the best investment.
I hope you have a good fan in that system.
Yeah. I've got multiple fans. I think there's like four fans in there.
Jeez.
But it's been one of the best investments because I've gotten so much good work, even just on things that I wanted to make. Mm. And it's actually there's been a lot of images in my brain that I haven't been able to execute in a long time. And so now that I've, like, you know, kind of put Call of Duty on the back burner, it's like,
is it more that you just, like, it's kind of hard to put it onto computer, or you just haven't had the time to do it?
I didn't have the time to do it. So now that I kind of just had this relaxing period of, like, mm-hmm. okay, I can, like, sit at home for a little bit and make some work of my own.
That's
I think
it's
been very meditative. So I've enjoyed it a lot, especially with new tech and learning. And it kind of brought me back to the fact that when I'm fixing stuff on a daily basis, mm-hmm. and just like kind of running back and forth, you forget to learn. And I needed to sit down and learn some new things. And
it's always good when you're able to pull back and kind of like forget about what your normal day, I guess, day job is, and kind of work on your own kind of stuff.
Because
it's you never want to lose that, like, creativity and artistic
mm-hmm.
power, a passion that you have.
Yeah, and it's easy to get burnt out.
Yeah.
And I think I was getting burnt out, so I had to give myself a refresher of just, like, jumping into something else and, you know, something that I would love to do. And I found the rendering process. I've always loved the rendering process. Mm. I just found something that was so cool and fast that I could do so much more. Mm. So now I just, you know, I turn on my computer. That's the first thing I go to is Octane, because I can do so much with it.
That's really cool. Well, I think we're about time, but would you have any, like, last bit of information you'd like to give for anybody who, not necessarily just the game industry, but, like, even the film industry, just any kind of part of the entertainment industry or something like that that are looking to kind of get in that genre, maybe any, like, a little bit of tidbits you might be able to give to them?
In terms of the rendering or the...
Just in general, if they're looking to get into, like, the AAA title scene, if they're looking to get into, like, maybe film, or even, I guess, it's modeling or animation, anything, if they're looking to kind of get in that kind of area, what's just something maybe... To, I guess, more from a personal level of getting into how do I want to say this? Hold on. Just a place, like, if you were to give students who are about to graduate and are trying to get a job in somewhere in that kind of area, what would be, like, maybe a piece of advice you might give them?
I think having conviction in what you want to make. I think sometimes we try to follow too many people. I think it's about synthesizing the great work that's out there. Mm-hmm. And finding your own expression, because it's too easy to fall in line with whatever is out there. You know, it's like, oh, someone's made The Last of Us. I want to make The Last of Us. I don't think that's the point. I think it's finding your own voice, especially if you're trying to make it into the industry, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think companies appreciate that free spirit, the enterprising individual that can present themselves in that way. It was like, okay, no, I'm bringing something new. I really am a passionate individual that has ideas that, you know, break the mold. And I think just being persistent and diligent and learning. You know, I think learning is what I was just talking about before. It's like, if I didn't do that for myself, I would have kind of just, you know, got caught in a shell. You know, I would have just like...
So, you know, maybe keep learning. Like, if you see a new piece of software out there, take the time to try to get to know it because it'll help you in the long run.
Yeah, or even just a process, you know. If you want to... You know, sometimes just picking up a pencil and starting to draw again, you know, it just made a big difference for me. I got a moleskin, went to India, and then I was just drawing the whole time, like on the plane, on the train, on the boat, and I was just like draw people. And, you know, I realized I was missing that, you know, and it brought me back to techniques that my hand was forgetting.
Oh, wow.
So I think you know, just find your own voice. Find, because everyone has an expression that sometimes they don't feel confident expressing. But, you know, I think it's finding that, and then finding the route for it to get to the companies that you want to work for.
Gotcha.
And I think companies want people that want to work for them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So because, like, IW, I used to play first-person shooters all the time. So one of the things that came up in the interview was, like, you like first-person shooters? I'm like, yeah, I love them. I'm playing Battlefield 2 right now with my friend. He's the tank driver. I'm the tank turret shooter. So I had this whole story to give to them. So I think your story at that moment is relevant to the company that you want to be part of.
Gotcha.
And I think that's a great place to start for anyone coming out of school.
Awesome. Well, I think that's all we've got. This is Indie Game Nation. And again, this is Neil Carr. Neil, it's been great talking to you again.
Thank you, Kyle.
And I will catch you guys all next time.